attacking his curriculum with the gusto of a born schoolteacher. "We're going to try a lesser summoning, a Type 3 invocation using these coordinates I've sketched on the blackboard. This should raise a primary manifestation of nameless horror, but it'll be a fairly tractable nameless horror as long as we observe sensible precautions. There will be unpleasant visual distortions and some proto-sapient wittering, but it's no more intelligent than a News of the World reporter. Not really smart enough to be dangerous. That's not to say that it's safe, though. You can kill yourself quite easily by treating the equipment with disrespect. Just in case you've forgotten, this current is carrying 15 amps at 600 volts, and the baseboard is insulated and oriented correctly along a north-south magnetic axis. The geometry we're using for this run is a modified Minkowski space that we can derive by setting pi to 4. There's no fractal dimension involved, but things are complicated slightly because the space to which we're mapping this diagram has a luminiferous ether. Gather round, please. You need to be inside the security cordon when I power up the circuit. Manesh, if you could switch on the absolutely no entry sign. We gather round the test bench. I hover near the back. I've seen similar experiments before. In fact, I've done much more exotic ones in the basement back at Chateau Cthulhu. Compared to the insanely complex summonings Brains assembles inside his laser grid, this is introductory-level stuff. Just an official checkpoint on my personnel record. Did I tell you about the friend of mine who was turned down for a job as a trainee scientific officer because he was unqualified? His PhD was no good. The job description said 3 GCSE passes, and he'd long since lost all his high school certificates. That's the way the civil service works. Still, it's interesting to watch the other students in this course. Babs, blonde, bubble and squeak with big framed spectacles, is treating the bench like an unexploded bomb. I think she's new to this, and still too much under the influence of The Exorcist, probably expects heads to start spinning round and green slime to start spewing at any moment. Vollmann should have told the students that's what we keep the ectoplasm wallers around for. Impresses the brass no end, but that's another course. John, Manesh, Deepak, and Mike are behaving just like bored junior technical staff on another week away from the desk is as good as a holiday training course. Fred from accounting looks confused, as if he's mislaid his brain, and Callie's found a pressing reason to go powder her nose. Can't say I blame her. This kind of experiment is fun. The same way that demonstrating a thermite reaction in a chemistry lab is fun. It can blow up in your face. I make damn sure that the electrical fire extinguisher is precisely 2 paces behind me and 1 pace to my right. Okay, everybody pay attention. Don't, whatever happens, touch the grid. Don't, under any circumstances, say anything once I start. Don't, on pain of your life, step outside the red circle on the floor. We're on top of an earthed cage here, but if we go outside it... Topology is everything. The idea of a summoning is simple. You create an attractor node at point A. You put the corresponding antinode at point B. You stand in one of them, energize the circuit, and something appears at the other. The big gotcha is that a human observer is required. You can't do it by remote control. Insert some quantum cat mumbo-jumbo about collapsing the wave function and Wigner's friend versus the Animal Liberation Front here. Better hope you pick the right circle to stand in, otherwise you're going to learn far more than you ever wanted to know about applied topology, like how the universe looks when you're turned inside out. It's not quite as bad as it sounds. For added security, you can superimpose the attractor node and the safety cell, locking in the summoned agency, which means they shouldn't be able to get to us at the antinode. Which is why Herr Dr. Vollmann, mit der dueling scars und der bad attitude, has plonked the test bench right in the middle of the red pentagram painted on the lecture theatre floor, and is enjoining us all to stand tight. Of course, to get to the fire extinguisher, I'd have to step out of the circle.
"Is his practice approved by the health and safety officer?" Fred asks.
"Quiet, please." Vollmann shuts his eyes, obviously psyching himself up for the activation sequence. "Power." He shoves a knife switch over, and a light comes on. "Circuit 2. A button is depressed. "Is there anybody there?"
Green vapor seems to swirl at the edges of my vision as I focus on the pentagram of silver wire. Lights glow beneath it, set in a baseboard made of timber harvested from a used gallows. Setup is everything. 3. Volman pushes another button, then pulls a twist of paper out of his pocket. Tearing it, he exposes a sterile lancet, which he shoves into the ball of his left thumb without hesitation. The hair on the back of my neck is standing on end as he shakes his hand at the attractor, and a bead of blood flicks away from it, bounces off the air above one wire, rolls back toward the center, and hovers a foot above it, vibrating like a liquid ruby beneath the fluorescent lights.
"Is anybody there?"
mimics Fred. Abruptly, his face crinkles in a grin.
"Good joke. I almost believed it for a minute."
He reaches out toward the drop of blood, and I can feel vast forces gathering in the air around us. And all of a sudden, I can feel a headache coming on, like the tension before an electrical storm.
"No!"
squeaks Babs, realizing it's too late to stop him even as she speaks. I see Volman's face. It's a mask of pure terror. He doesn't dare move a muscle to stop Fred, because touching Fred will only spread the contagion. Fred is already lost, and the last thing you do to someone who's in contact with high tension is grab them to pull them away. That is, if you do it, it's the last thing you'll ever do. Fred stands still, and his jacket sleeve twitches as if his muscles are writhing underneath it. His hand is over the attractor, and the drop of blood begins to drift toward his fingertip. He is still smiling, like a man with his foot clamped to the third rail of the underground before the smoke and sparks appear. He opens his mouth.
"Yes,"
he says in a high, clear voice that is not his own.
"We are here."
There are luminous worms writhing behind his eyes.
"What did you do next?"
asks Boris. I lean back and stare up at the slowly roiling smoke dragons that curl under the fluorescent tubes. It takes me a few seconds to find my voice. My throat is raw and not